it, do you, Marty? You don't get it.
What is this, Nickelodeon? You up here dressed like Mr. Snuffleupagus?
It's December 11th, 2005. Yellow Card has released Rough Landing Holly from their sophomore album Lights and Sounds. Jack Black and Naomi Watts starring King Kong. And in TNA, it's time to break out your favorite baseball bats. Because you know why? This is Turning Point 2005. We're the Federation. I'm Tyler Fudge.
And I am changing the face of TNA the year of 2006.
You are Sting. The new face.
I am Fat Sting.
Travis Sting.
It's like a travesty.
Yeah, yes, but it's Travis Sting.
Travis Sting.
Hey, my name is Travis Sting Fudge. What did you say? Travis Sting. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can follow us on Twitter at Funeration. You can follow Travis on Twitter.
At Fudge Not.
Facebook and Instagram, Federation Podcast, t-shirts at whatamaneuver.net, and the Patreon shout-outs are going to be at the ass end of the show. But I just want to, I've checked every, like, all kinds of Patreons, and all I see are Canadian prices now.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a thing.
Yeah, so don't be alarmed, guys. It might seem like it's more expensive, but it's actually what you used to pay anyways due to conversion.
They're just telling you how it is.
Yeah,
they're just face value now.
Yeah, yeah. They're not being the shady ones. Kill Whitey indeed, Trox.
I like
Kill
it.
Whitey indeed.
I like it where it's if you're in another country, I shouldn't have to read everything as USD because, you know, one thing read improperly, I may think that I'm getting gypped.
It's true. That's true though. You know, you're not wrong because every now and then you'll look at a price, like especially on a site like eBay.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You'll look at a price and be like, oh, yeah, no, that seems logical. And then all of a sudden it's like, nope, U.S. dollars. But, like, it's a weird thing. Like, the price would be in U.S. dollars, but the shipping is usually always in, like, the regular Canadian price. And not to forget, too, the music. Music by lovely old Mitch, who's in the chat. Well, Travis, how are you?
I'm good.
That's good.
I almost copped a PlayStation 5 today.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you almost buy a one on Facebook or not Facebook? But like
Walmart.
Oh, they got stock in.
Yes. Yes. Now, I don't know if this was going to work or not because it was Walmart.com. But
I don't know.
I had it in my cart. I got one of these cool affiliate links that immediately added it to your cart when you hit the refresh button.
Oh, yeah.
The moment it went and stuck. Not a bot thing, but so I created an account being like, you know what? I should probably create an account just in case if it has tracking.
What did the price say?
It was American price, like $4.99.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
You
probably pay a lot of duty fees.
I don't care. That's better than buying it for $900 off StockX.
It wasn't on Walmart.ca.
I have stock alerts followed on Twitter. Okay. I just tried it.
Yeah.
You know, it's better than paying $1,000 for it on StockX.
Oh, 100%. 100%. You'll pay roughly the same price. You'd have to pay shipping, I would assume, on that one. But like
StockX?
No.
Walmart? Oh, if Walmart. It's coming from America? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But I tried. I tried.
And
boy,
it didn't work.
Did I fail?
Yeah, it didn't work, eh? They said no.
Troy, yeah, by this time next year, probably. Or maybe the PS6 will just have a better launch. And I'll just get the PlayStation 6.
Can you imagine if fucking scalpers just kept on taking the PS5s until the day the PS6 came out?
Eventually, they have to sell them in stores.
Well, eventually, you'd think there will be stock in stores, right? Like
eventually, you'd think so.
Man,
do they have to mine like the fucking elements for this PlayStation or something like that? Is that why it's so sought after? Like, do they fucking ore the gold for its fucking inputs and shit?
But nonetheless, it is what it is. We're here to talk about Turning Point 2005. We might as well get into a couple of the news notes from the show. But the big story in wrestling for the rest of 2005 really are just like the death and circumstances of Eddie Guerrero's passing. You know, so like WWE at this point in time, they come out fast with the drug policy, the wellness policy, after Eddie's death. They also begin to use him in storylines pretty fast as well. They're using him in a storyline now on TV. They might be. I don't think it's the Ray storyline, is it?
The Ray storyline happens after the Rumble. That'd be around February.
Yeah, so I don't know. They might be as little as like they're bringing him up on television. You know, just more.
Oh, sure. It's, man, it's just another storyline for Ray. It's a way to get him over. It's a vehicle.
Yeah.
And
oh,
they,
yeah.
They changed Chavo from Kerman White to Chavo again.
Which makes complete sense.
Yeah. Vicky comes back. I don't know if it's right away or not, but shit, yeah. No, it's terrible. And, you know, at least TNA, fucking Christian does the frog splash now. Cool. It's all right.
Yep. In light, Dixie Carter, that is, comes out and says that drugs are not a problem in the TNA locker room. And I immediately think of the obvious Hardy, right? We all know it. Sabu.
The drugs with Hardy's not the problem. It's the fact that he misses dates, Tyler.
Yes, yes. He's not punctual.
It's not like the drugs lead him to losing dates and losing motivation.
No, never. No, no way. Raven. I don't know if he's on the drugs right now, but he doesn't seem like he's not. Then you've got BG James.
Oh, BG and Kip? Yeah, they're both really hard off right now.
Yeah, yeah. Six Pac.
Uh-huh.
He went missing for a week.
And Scott, when he was there the year before.
Scott Hall. I mean, like.
Perk Angle.
Yeah. Perk Angle's about to show up. Right?
And he gets bad. He will have the period of time where he takes like 120 fucking perks a day and fucking wrestles. And that'll be in TNA. Like, Vince thought he was going to die in 2006.
Yeah.
He goes to fucking TNA. Yeah, he fucking dies a little bit more.
just on the inside. But it is argumentable that it's one of his best run.
Yes. No. 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 I don't think so.
I'm not saying that it is his best. I'd say it's arguable that it's his best run. Like, you can argue it.
I like his work in TNA.
Yep.
But he could have had a much more meaningful run that would have looked better on his career had he stopped at a certain point. Like, I think there's a point where Karen Angle divorces him, and they do the Karen Jarrett storyline. Yeah. Kurt Angle starts growing his hair back and shit.
Oh, yeah. No, like, definitely that part. Going like that era, the latter parts of his run is not very good at all.
No, I think once the main event Mafia,
a couple years.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul Heyman's WWE contract is about to end, and I remember this rumor as a kid, and it was rumored that Paul Heyman's going to go to TNA for sure.
I don't know if it's at this point in time or if it's after the ECW revival. But he was asked to join TNA, be the head booker.
Oh, yeah.
And I think what was his thing was to fire everyone under 40 or under 30.
There was something along those lines. They would have to get rid of all of those big, heavy contracts to those big guys.
Yeah, and just nobody over the age of 40 or something like that be featured on TV.
Yeah.
Like, he wanted to just feature young people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that would have been really fucking interesting. But it would have been an X Division show.
Yeah. But arguably, that's what TNA was, and that's what they were popular.
Could have built
for.
It around Joe. Yeah,
yeah.
So many things that they could have done.
Like, obviously, Paul Heyman would sign back with the WWE.
Yes,
obviously.
Yes,
but
he would come back for the CM Punk thing. And that would be the next time that he would come back after ECW.
Well, yeah, it was CM Punk. Because CM Punk tweeted out that tweet where it was like, "Look who I found backstage." Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And, just before they came out. And while this is going on, there's a rumor as well that Jarrett's trying to take a play to take over booking that's currently held by Scott D'Amore. One could only wonder why he'd do that. It's Jeff Jarrett.
I thought that there was a conspiracy going on.
There is a conspiracy going
TNA
on.
TNA management.
They don't like him. Christian's the golden boy, and Sting's here to take his face away. So, But that's more about that in the show, because Gerald won't let you forget that. That's for goddamn well sure.
It's like some of the shittiest heel work I've ever seen in my life.
It's garbage.
TNA management doesn't want me to defend my title. Well, man, if you don't want to wrestle, then don't fucking hold the title. Just, like, be a character on TV. It doesn't matter, man. I'd rather see you just be Shane Douglas.
I'd rather not see you at all. That's what I'd say.
Yeah.
And DDP currently is now trying to sue Jay-Z for the use of the diamond cutter hand gesture.
Dude, why would you try and sue someone that's a part of the Illuminati? Like, you're just going to get, like, a hit put out on you. Now, I'm joking, of course, but just I'm just saying that, you know, you set yourself up for that one. What is he going to do? Get him to heal his back by doing some yoga in his fucking basement?
Maybe. He's like, Beyonce, come check
this
out.
Bro, when you were slinging clack on the streets, bro. You threw your brack out, bro. Fuck, I'm like Tyler tonight. Holy shit.
Dick. Before we get into the show itself, I figured we might as well just touch on some notable things that have happened on Impact as of late. I didn't watch all the episodes, but I breezed through some of them. On the November 19th edition, Jeff Jarrett spent the evening trying to figure out who he's facing for the NWA title at Turning Point. Much like he did tonight, he just interjected in everybody's promos. But after asking Mike Tenay, Jarrett finally asked Larry Zbysko, and he was informed that his opponent is Rhino. Jarrett then asked, why isn't it Raven or Monty Brown? Aren't they the ones in line for a title shot? And so Jeff Jarrett seems just as confused as all the fans. It's like, Monty Brown should definitely be getting a title shot.
The stupid thing is that they could have fixed all this by doing a four-way at Genesis instead of that stupid fucking tag match.
Or a four-way here.
Yeah. I'd only say a four-way at Genesis because I liked the match between Rhino and Jeff Jarrett.
Rhino and Jeff Jarrett's match is not bad.
It's better than the tag match last month. That was rated 4 stars. Crazy.
On the November 26th episode of Impact, Jackie Gata debuted and confronted Jeff Jarrett about his alliance with Gail Kim. Jarrett pleaded with Jackie not to be upset. Jackie had none of it and jumped on Gail, leading to a catfight. I remember watching this as a kid, just being like, oh, is Jeff Jarrett supposed to be fucking Charlie Haas's woman? Right? So.
This, it makes no sense. They just signed her for no reason. They have no idea for her whatsoever.
No, nothing. There's nothing they're going to do with her at this point in time.
I don't think they ever do anything with her.
No, no. Well, I mean, what are you going to do with Jackie Gate anyways, right? Like,
she'd be a manager. I don't think she could even talk.
No, and exactly. What's the point
of
a manager?
She is just something to look at. That's it. Now, I mean, Tracy Brooks definitely got the same treatment.
Oh, yeah.
Where she is just something to look at, but at the same time, she was also terrible as a manager.
Christian also made his debut on the December 8th episode, taking on Bobby Roode in a match. So,
I'm surprised that they had him debut on the TV show rather than the pay-per-view, but the TNA. TNA is going to TNA.
TNA is going to do what TNA does. That's just the way it is. But we might as well get into the show here. This is TNA Turning Point 2005, December 11th, 2005. From obviously Orlando, Florida, Universal Studios. There's 900 people there, like always. But Travis, how many pay-per-view buys were there?
21,000.
30.
Consistently 30, huh?
It's a good number. Yeah. Well, I mean, the 30 consistency doesn't stay for all that long.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine.
But
I'm sure next month will be good for them with Sting. I'm sure that one does not go lower than 30.
I doubt it. I definitely doubt it. With that being said, Travis.
Oh no, I can't remember what you talked about during the intro.
Well, you'll soon remember.
Yellow card.
Travis, Yellow Card's song Rough Landing Holly is a bigger part of a concept album put together by the band's lead singer Ryan Key. It's a song about how the character Holly Wood brings you down. But what didn't bring anyone down was the video game that featured this song on the soundtrack, and nobody fucking mentioned it in the feed. Flat Out 2, Need for Speed Carbon, Madden 07, or NHL 07?
Hmm. I don't know this song. I could see it being on every single game other than... Oh, man. Maybe even Madden. It could be. Probably not Carbon. Probably not Carbon. I'm going to say... Flat Out 2.
You're right. It's Flat Out 2. Wow. You definitely got it right.
Never played Flat Out.
It's funny because like this was my question. And then when I was talking to Mitch, he was just like, fuck, I love that in Flat Out. I was like, that's my question. Shit. And that's why I was like, nobody fucking say this.
Well, fair enough.
Good job, Travis. Good fucking job. The show, it opens up. You know, your humdrum TNA opening, you know, just they cycle through all the people, all the millions of fans in attendance of the Impact Zone.
The Parthenon of Pain.
The Parthenon of Pain. But you open up and you see that the ring is displayed for the barbed wire massacre. There's no ropes. They're barbed wire instead. And it makes sense why this is the first match, just because of logistics. And also... It starts off the show with great bang. Like, it was a fantastic start, if you ask me.
It's either going first or last.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's no other way you could really do it logistically. Like, can you imagine having to take two long breaks?
Like, yeah, because the break after this match is long enough.
So long. There's like four or five segments. But this is a great example for TNA doing a hot start to the show, at least. You know, it's much better than Diamonds in the Rough.
This is the best opener we have seen so far.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely is. They would even go so far as to have to change the mat because of all the blood. Yeah. Did you notice that? The mat is...
Oh, the mat was kind of so covered.
Bloody. So bloody.
Abyss's arm?
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, Abyss's arm was bleeding a lot. But I feel with the whole building of this whole story in this match, Abyss being afraid of barbed wire, wouldn't you think that he would at least show some sign of still having a little bit of spookiness towards the barbed wire?
He's got gloves on. He's fine.
He's got his hands taped up. Yeah, he's ready. He learned during the thumbtacks. It's like, oh, don't want it in my palms anymore.
Who can even think what is going on in that man's head?
Abyss's head?
Yes, he's probably thinking about cracking some more eggs.
Ooh. But, you know, there's one part, you know, it's Sabu in this match where... Like, Sabu's a nut job. We all know that, right? You're like, wake up, Terry Brunk.
He looks unusually focused for this match.
He's very focused. But I was a big fan of just, like, how his unhinged character still runs to the ropes and then just, like, skids like Sonic or something.
He has a great... I don't know if this is a compliment or not, but he has great ring awareness in a barbed wire ring.
Yeah, he does. He does. He knows exactly where to be. And the best way to land for minimal damage to bad parts. You know what I mean? He seems like...
There's one person you're going to wrestle in a barbed wire match. It may as well be Sabu.
At least he knows how to get you out if he's in the right frame of mind, right?
Yeah.
So
maybe Mr. Pogo, if you're into getting a knife pulled on you.
Oh, man. You know, if you want to get sicked with the sickle.
If you want to get sicked with the sickle.
Sounds like some like a gangster rap song, Sick with the Sickle.
Sick with the sickle, son.
Yeah, maybe not gangster rap. I feel like insane in a membrane. Those guys.
Cypress Hill,
yeah. Sick in the sickle. I don't know.
They're not really gangster rap.
That's why I said I don't think it's gangster rap.
They're too stoned.
That's why I was like, I backtracked a bit. But Sabu gets thrown into the barbed wire to start the match off on a couple occasions. So, like, it's right at, like, ding, ding. Okay, Sabu, you're going to the barbed wire right now. Right? Like, just they feel each other out a little bit. But it doesn't take long for Sabu to just get thrown into it.
Isn't that when he gets sent chest first?
Yeah.
After a missed dive?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fucking brutal. And it like, is. They did something right here where they kind of let those moments soak in.
Yeah.
TNA's really bad at pacing.
Yeah.
But they're really good at letting a moment in a match to let that thing sink in and just...
Yeah.
you know, kind of ride the heat that's going on with that.
They did do a good job with that here, where when something does happen, it's not, okay, now on to the next spot. It's, let's sell this, you know what I mean? And it's, thank God they did. Sabu then whips out what I can only think of as a plastic knife?
Is that a spike?
Was it a spike?
Call it a spike. I know that Tenay likes to liberally call it a spike.
Okay. Because I was like, is that a disposable?
It's probably
plastic
a plastic knife from catering, dude. You know, a little tiny fucking fork, knife, cutlery thing that you get in a little plastic, little piece of plastic.
That's what I was thinking it was. But, I mean, if it was a spike.
Now, if he can cut Abyss's open up, cut Abyss's open. Cut Abyss's arm open like that with a plastic knife.
Yeah, but I mean, that was done with the barbed wire, wasn't it?
Probably.
I'm just saying, that
would be intuitive.
Yeah, that's definitely being resourceful. You see Sabu, they cut to his face while he's tangled in this barbed wire. And he's got that, you can see it, there's white tape around whatever this object is. And that object is full of blood, and it's in his mouth. And it's like, fuck Sabu, like, that's just too much for me. Like, he's just got this bloody object in his mouth, and it's like, that could be Abyss's blood, could be your blood. It's like, oof.
Could have been a blade. Maybe the blade cut his mouth open. I mean, you know, a lot of wrestlers put the blade in their mouth.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe Sabu is so focused because he drinks blood. If he doesn't have...
He's a vampire.
Yeah, maybe Sabu's a vampire.
Yeah, good morning. It brings a whole new angle to
wake
good morning,
up, Terry Brunk.
Yeah, wake up, Terry Brunk. Can't comes out of the coffin. Yeah. He just sits up Undertaker style in the coffin. The coffin throws shit at the fucking camera.
I'm just imagining fucking... Sabu and like what we do in the shadows now.
Would there be a musical portion?
There's no musical portion. What
I'm just saying. What would there be a musical? Would Sabu break out in song during Wake Up Terry Brunk? Instead of
I would imagine
guests.
It being like Trevor from Grand Theft Auto V's doing a musical number.
Yeah. Calls Sandman up and they just sing sea shanties while drinking beer.
Have you heard about that Trailer Park Boys sea shanty?
No.
Yeah, apparently they got one now, too.
Oh, really? Everybody's doing sea shanties these days.
The fuck?
Everybody must... what's the Stan Rogers or whatever?
Everyone wants to be a Newfoundlander?
Yeah, everybody's just listening to their favorite fucking folk singer.
Everyone's
like,
listening
to
their favorite
shanty.
Roger Rousel song.
Yeah, yeah.
Good for them. Yeah,
good for the... Shout out to Roger Rousel.
Fuck yeah, shout out. Songbird of our generation.
two albums.
Fuck, man. That dude has more talent in his mustache than TNA has altogether. Shout out to Roger Rousel.
That's a bold claim.
Yeah, buddy.
It's a bold, bold claim.
why did I do that?
You get a bunch of barbed wire boards. They end up getting introduced. The barbed wire board basically plays an intricate part into the end of the show. Or end of the match, at least. Sabu, he would fend off a couple attempts by Abyss to be slammed into this, but he would, the third time would be a charm, and he would end up going belly first into it. Abyss would bring in another one of those devilish boards, prop it up in the corner. Sabu would Irish whip Abyss into it, and then he becomes an Abyss barbed wire sandwich.
I do like his his arm shaking.
Yeah.
He's so emotive, Abyss.
He is.
He's a very emotive monster.
Yeah. And his mask is not one of those masks that makes it impossible to see emotion.
No, you can still kind of see what his mouth does and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's one of those things where it's just extra icing on the cake when Abyss uses his body to emote. But no, as soon as he fell onto the other barbed wire board and just became an ice cream sandwich... I just popped at it. I was like, ha. And then Sabu just fucking had to be uncomfortable when he just butt thumps onto the barbed wire boards. Like, that had to kill. Like, there's no way that didn't hurt like hell. Like, fuck me, man. Thank guys wearing a mask.
I liked him doing a little badonkadonk.
Badonkadonk onto the board. but no, Sabu would get the win after. I called it a bonsai drop. The crowd then, though, they show respect at the end of the match. They start chanting for Abyss, and they clap and say thank you. And Abyss Noctis to the back. But this leads us to all of the time that it takes to change the ring ropes. They would show earlier today where Planet Jared arrived via limousine and Rhino arrived by Ford Lariat, basically showing the difference between these two competitors. We then see Four Live Crew with Douglas, and they're a happy-go-lucky family now. So Conan's going to shake and bake Team Canada. Shake and bake.
I hope that's what he calls the fucking boot throwing.
Shake and bake. Like, it's crazy that that's a thing. That became, like, when I first seen that, I was like, that's a...
It's kind of a shame. Like, this is probably, like, one of the last matches we'll ever see of Conan.
You know, he you won't see very much.
I'm pretty sure after this is when his health, like, declines, isn't it? It's the kidney issues, he's fucking in a wheelchair and shit like that, he loses all that weight.
Yeah, the hip.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's around this time, for sure. It's not much long after this. I remember just wondering why Conan never wrestled anymore when I was first watching TNA, not really knowing what was going on. We go to the back, then we see James Mitchell, who's consoling Abyss while he's being tended by the medical staff. They even embrace and hug. And I can only imagine what James Mitchell whispers into Abyss's ears when trying to calm this fucking beast down. I'm going to get you a colostomy bag. I'm going to let you breathe that air in. It's going to make you feel good, Abyss. Some weird
shit. Probably just like watched porn together or something like that.
Like, you know, I could see the Sinister Minister being a dude where you walk into his house and he's just got on like fucking BBW porn or something.
Classic 70s porn.
Yeah, big bush porn.
Yeah.
BBP. No. That's basically, you know, then they would cut back to TNA and Mike. You know what I just dawned on me here? Is that it's so hard to distinguish between saying TNA and TNA.
He was meant to be there.
He was meant. He is, like, his namesake is the name of the company, for Christ's sake.
They should have just, oh, man. Why didn't they call him Mike TNA?
Yeah, or Mr. TNA. Mr. TNA.
With
Mike
the
TNA.
T and the N and the A all capitalized in his name.
Yeah. Missed it, guys. You fucking missed it. You missed it all. But we finally got the ropes back after they run down every match just going to be on the card here. It's Austin Aries and Matt Bentley with Tracy, pointless manager, like we said earlier, taking on Alex Shelley and Roderick Strong.
What were they again? The Ministry? The Prophecy?
In ROH?
No, like on the last show. With Christopher Daniels. What were they called?
The Prophecy, I believe. Yeah.
The Prophecy?
Yeah, I think so. I just don't understand why Strong and Aries, who is a proven team in ROH, why they would just like purposely have them split up. Like, does TNA think that, you know, a lot of their audience is, you know, they must know a lot of their audience is ROH watchers.
You would think so. I don't know. Maybe it's just down to a whole thing where it's like, yeah, Roderick Strong, you look like a baby. You're a heel, buddy. Austin Aries, fucking hate your guts.
Your face.
Bet you the crowds love you, man. You're a piece of shit, Austin Aries. You'll make a good guy.
People are going to love you, you piece of shit. there's a sign in the crowd. This is this dude, he's holding the jar of peanut butter. And it literally says, "It's peanut butter Shelley time." Wow. I popped.
I thought it was going to be like a Lost reference there. Like maybe he just watched it on ABC
picture
week.
Hugo?
And it's just a imaginary jar of peanut butter for Claire.
Yes, Claire was the one that loved the peanut butter. Yeah, just a picture of Claire's baby or something. Yeah, be great. Shelley, though, he comes out and they're starting, because they didn't do this in the last pay-per-view, the video camera spot, right?
No, I think the Shelley cam is brand new.
Yeah, the Shelley cam has begun.
He wants to rewatch his matches from a better angle, which is from a camcorder.
And then he would get another angle, and that's a height angle, and it would be Kevin Nash.
Ain't that a slight to TNA's production that... He only watches his own matches
on his hard cam. His own hard cam.
It's just really like indie style filming. Can everything look like Full Impact Pro?
I'd like to have the timestamp in the bottom at all times, please. Thank
you. Oh, God, you need to know the time.
Got to.
You got to know the time.
Tracy would come out with Matt Bentley, and all of a sudden, it's just the whole mood of the show changes. Like, she's in, like, this cocktail dress, this thin spaghetti strap cocktail dress. It's like she's dressed for the TNA Christmas party, and it's, like, right after the show or something. But Travis, like, what... what would the TNA Christmas party be like, though? What are you going to see there? Like, you know there has to be just...
debauchery?
As you took the word right out of my mouth.
Okay, well, front row at the bar. There's probably not even seats at the bar, but Dixie Carter just is there at all times and with a revolving door of old wrestlers.
Oh, yeah.
Except for Jarrett. You know, Jarrett's a family man. He's got... Jill, whatever, Jill Jarrett, sounds about right. J-I-L-L-J-R-R-E-T-H-E, yeah, so they're fucking probably playing with the kids and probably saddling up all the other TNA children that are at the Christmas party with their deadbeat parents.
You wouldn't bring children.
I don't know, man. Maybe they do.
I don't know.
And then I'm sure Joe and AJ are probably playing some video games, you know, probably with Chris Sabin and Dutt.
I mean, it's very possible. Very possible. There's pictures of Jeff Jarrett everywhere.
I'm assuming A1 probably tries to, like, get Jackie Gator to fuck him, and she refuses, so
why,
he, like...
Why A1?
He just looks like he would be, like, ripped on coke or something like that at the Christmas party. Like, that one dude that, like, takes it to another level. And they probably got, like, a little tiny JVC speaker playing Usher in the background.
No. Definitely not. Toby Keith is there singing White Christmas, guaranteed. Garen fucking Teed, okay? Alex Shelley is videotaping everything just like Behind the Bash in 1989 or whatever. You'll see fucking Sabu just smoking a crack rock and they're all just fucking playing for the camera. Guaranteed. Another thing that I think is guaranteed is Kevin Nash getting wine drunk and crying everywhere. He's leaving little spill spots. You can see it. It's like a snail trail.
I don't think anything bad's happened to him yet.
Oh, man, that doesn't matter. Wine drunk can make you cry anyways.
I'm thinking he's the one with Dixie. Like, he's at the revolving door, but he can't get out of there. Like, it's just him, Dixie, and then, like, another dude at all times.
Yeah, and that other dude is Sean Waltman, because Kevin Nash will not let Sean Waltman out of the sight because he's a liability. And now that's why Kevin Nash is wine drunk crying, because he's afraid Sean Waltman's going to disappear again. And he doesn't want to have to deal with that anymore. All while this is going on, somebody let Hall in, and he's just run amok for sure, guaranteed.
Shane Douglas is probably puking somewhere.
Yeah, he's in the bathroom puking. Raven's just at the bar. He's talking to everybody. He is just chatting everybody's ear off. Everybody's sick of listening to Raven. Like Sami Zayn, you know what I mean? Talks too much. That's what I think is going on. Now he's drunk, so he's just talking even more. Right? Hardy. He's crawling around the floor like Zombie Hardy for sure.
God, guaranteed. I forgot about Jeff Hardy.
Licking the floor because he's high on bath salts and stuff. Just screaming at people. Not making words. Just...
What about Larry Zbysko?
Larry Zbysko has definitely gone to bed by now.
Oh, he probably is the type of person. Makes an appearance. Comes by, says hello.
Yeah.
Peace right out.
Yeah, I'm going to help the hotel room. I'm going to go to sleep. Sabu's throwing shit, yelling Merry Shitmas.
Him and Mike Tenay are probably the only two that did not go to the Christmas party.
Yeah, Mike
Don Tenet. West is selling merchandise at the Christmas
party.
Don West
is doing coke off the fucking bar.
Don West is selling wrestlers their own t-shirts to them. He's taking advantage of the debauchery. He's just trying to make a quick buck.
Yeah.
Earl Hebner just got fired.
Lastly, you're going to have AJ Styles and Samoa Joe in the corner playing video games. But AJ Styles... it's just going to be shaking his head, looking at all the debauchery. He's just like, not my God. Not my God.
Not my Jesus.
Yeah. Austin, was it the 316 lines? Like, not my, was it, is it not my Jesus or not my God?
Not my Jesus. Yeah. Pretty sure.
But yeah. That's probably what the TNA Christmas party would be like. Might as well get back to this fucking match, I suppose. That was a long diversion from it. I mean, but it is a Christmas party. You got to dive into it really, really deep here. You get a lot of double team offense from Strong and Shelley. I thought Strong and Shelley were a great I don't want to say great. They were a very fun tag team to watch. They had some good double team maneuvers for two guys that doesn't tag on the regular, at least on TNA television. What did you think about the match?
I thought it was fine. Not a big Matt Bentley fan at all, if you can tell.
Oh, of course. Definitely not. I'm not either.
He's the most pushed in this match, and the match is pretty much built around him having a hot tag that gets little to no fanfare.
Yeah.
He does have a good elbow drop on Shelly at one point, which it gets the crowd moving a bit.
He has improved his elbow drop a little bit.
But, I mean, compared to the work of Roderick Strong, Alex Shelley, and Austin Aries in this match, that was the least of my worries, because I thought that, Strong, fucking incredibly, incredibly impressive.
When Strong gave Austin Aries, like, this single knee backbreaker, did you notice that Austin Aries damn near broke his fucking neck on it?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, he gives him the single knee backbreaker, and Aries kind of takes it too far, and like by the time his body hits the leg of Roddy, his neck and back are just on the mat already. It looked uncomfortable, but I mean, he gets right up and he goes to town, so it is what it is. But for the best part of this match, Aries was babyface in peril, and I maybe it's because I think he's a piece of shit in real life. But, like, I couldn't get into him being babyface in peril.
He just looks like a heel.
Yeah, he does. He doesn't look like somebody that you're going to say, yeah, I hope he doesn't get beat up. You know what I mean? You look at, like you said in the beginning, you look at Roddy and you think he's the one that you don't want to see get beat up. Even Alex Shelley has a smarmy face. And Matt Bentley, there's no likability in Matt Bentley whatsoever.
Oh, it's the whole Shawn Michaels thing. You like him because he's related to somebody.
Yeah. I don't know, this thing about him where it's just like, yeah, you probably think of yourself as much as Shawn Michaels thinks about himself. His website was proven of that when we went back with the Wayback Machine.
That was clip show worthy.
That was fucking Matt Bentley. Mitch and he's fine. Last thing I see in the chat is the JILL.
Yeah.
It was fucking great. It was fucking great.
It works.
Does. It really does. Strong and Shelley would almost mount a comeback, but Strong is sent to the outside, almost taking out the camera. His reaction to almost taking out the camera was great, where he just stops. He's like, oh, sorry. And then Bentley would hit the super kick on Shelley, picking up a victory for his team, and everybody on the round the ring bounce. Yeah, I would bounce beforehand and get the fuck out of this match, but hey, it is what it is. It is what it is. Tanay tells us, though, that Monty has taken over the backstage area. He has a blonde doll in his hand. It has a cat. Is it Bob the Builder?
Pretty sure.
Is that what that is?
Looked a lot like him.
I mean, it very well could be. Very well could be.
Or just a Canadian plush doll, right?
Yeah, just strictly Canadian, though. And he would begin to cut a promo. And let's just take a listen,
Cage, shall we? You come in here, running your mouth with your hands on your hips. Talk about what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. I thought there was a dress code up north. But obviously, Shane, Christian Cage didn't get the memo. And
what music is that, bro? Is that Matt Bentley's theme?
Shot it. He's trying to leapfrog the alpha male.
Leapfrog the alpha male, Christian Cage? You won't leapfrog anything. Leapfrogging the alpha male will not happen. Because if you try, that would mean that you think you're the alpha male. And obviously, you don't dress like the alpha male, G'd up from the feet up. You do not speak as eloquently, as magniloquently as the alpha male. You are not the rhetorician that the alpha male is. Pause for a second so you can go get your dictionaries and hit your TiVo. Christian Cage, you will not deal with the alpha male tonight. You will get dominated tonight, and you're gonna feel something. And exactly what you will feel tonight, Christian Cage, is the pounce. Period.
So I type in rhetorician. I see rhetoration, retiriation. I don't see rhetorician. I really don't.
It's probably not. I don't know, man. Like, is he supposed to say rhetorical, but in a different way?
Well, I mean. literally a rhetorical device of repetition. That's what reiteration is.
It's probably reiteration.
Yeah, so rhetorician. Maybe. Rhetorician. I mean, like, not a good look, but okay, whatever. Mitch confirms in the chat that it is totally a Bob the Builder.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, I can see it now. As soon as you were like, yeah, it's Bob.
The blonde is the hat, the construction hat.
Oh, okay, yeah. I gotcha. Up next, though, is Raven taking on another member from his past. It opens up with Larry Zbysko handing Raven his release to sign. Raven cuts a promo, laughs. This whole thing is fucking horrible. Even Raven in it is garbage. Really?
Why is he? What is he? Yeah, nothing makes sense.
No.
He's getting fired for winning matches.
Yeah. And then, like, he's got this stupid, maniacal laugh, and it's like, oh, dude, it sounds so fucking fake, dude. This whole thing seems so boring and dull.
And am I supposed to take Larry Zbysko seriously? The dude's wearing a polo shirt with a tiger on it and a Morphoplex logo on it, man. He looks like he's supposed to be like the equivalent of Shane Douglas.
He looks like he works behind the counter of the Napa Auto Parts. That's what he looks like.
On vacation at Universal Studios.
Yeah. I'm not surprised he doesn't show up with socks and sandals, actually.
Could you imagine?
But last month was Just Incredible, a.k.a. PJ Polacco. But who better than Just Incredible?
Christopher K.
Christopher K, indeed. Can't say his last name. Well, you can, because they reference him. It's like, this is Chris K, also known as Chris K. They do that to everybody. This is PJ Polacco.
He used to be known as Just Incredible. He was formerly known as Christian, going back to his old roots.
Christian, like, Cage.
Man, they know who, yeah. they have fucking eyes. They know who it is.
Yeah.
And plus, why couldn't you just, like, call him Canyon with a C?
Yeah. Or Chris Canyon with a C. Yeah. Just, I don't understand.
Bro, I'll give you two CCs of Canyon.
It's like, bro, the K is everything.
No, but, like, he could literally have a line where it's like, I'll give you two CCs. Once two Chris, CCs. Once Canyon. Who better? It's perfect. Like, fuck, man. But he wrestled good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no. He still could do it. You know, he was always a highlight of WCW.
I know they got injured at one point.
Oh, yeah.
In
that
WWE,
was,
which took him out for a bit.
That's what really halted anything with Canyon.
Yeah.
Because he came in, he was the U.S. champion, wasn't he?
He had a good year in 01, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the injury would kind of halt it, and it would go about, you know, where it would go. But, I mean, tragic story we really do not need to get into right now, especially when you hear, like, the Young Bucks side of it.
The Young Bucks?
Yeah, because they were really close with Chris Canyon, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, Canyon used to call him all the time, tell him how sad he was. He was trying to hit on Matt, apparently.
What?
He thought Matt was gay.
Holy shit.
Yeah, there's a whole story. I can't remember what podcast it is. It might
wow.
be the Jericho podcast.
I didn't know about
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Did you see today, I know you weren't watching wrestling at the time, but Tyler Rex came out as a woman today.
Yeah.
Just saw that on Twitter today. I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Was his name Gabby, I think?
Gabby.
Yeah, Gabby.
Gabby,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, I didn't even know who it was at first. Like, I seen the side-by-side photo, and I was like, it looks familiar.
Is that Sawyer Fulton?
Well, like, I was always seeing the real name, and I didn't know him by his real
name. Yeah, because his name was, like, Gabe Tuft or something
yeah,
like that.
And then all of a sudden, just one, I scroll and I see it again, and it's like Tyler Rex. And I was like, no way, because I was briefly watching when Tyler Rex was there when he was with, I think it was.
Wasn't he with Trent? Or Johnny Curtis? He's with Johnny
one
Curtis.
One of the two. Because they came from NXT.
Well, you hear a lot of stories about Rex on the Best Friends High Spots shows.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he was obviously in the system with Trent.
Yes.
When he first got up there, so.
Yeah. I looked and I was like, oh, it's Tyler Rex? Fair enough.
Yeah.
But, no. I mean, hey, live your best life. Do what you got to do. But Kanye would have a great deal of offense in this match. He does a rocker dropper deal from the middle turnbuckle. He attempts a big moonsault, but Raven gets out of the way, and he applies his favorite move, the ankle lock, again.
Loves that move.
Loves it. And it doesn't love him, though. Raven would be in control from here. He'd hip toss him down the ramp, introduce a chair. Canyon would then attempt the rocker dropper deal again, and it's reversed into a powerbomb onto said chair. Even flow DDT for the win. Post-match, Larry comes down to two bicker back and forth. Raven finally slaps Larry, and it comes to blows. Having to get them broken up by security is going to lead to a Raven-Larry Zbyszko match down the line. I've seen it. Don't really want to see it again. Probably won't pay a huge amount of attention to it.
Well, Larry has to, Larry concludes this feud because he has to go get surgery or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Fair enough. And that's when they do a switcheroo and they put Jim Cornette in that spot.
And then Raven would...
Serotonin.
Yeah, get fat and not really wrestle and would have
Kaz... Lose his hair.
And Matt Bentley do his... What was Matt Bentley's name again?
Murder.
Murder. And then...
Murder, Kaz.
And Havoc.
And Havoc.
It was Johnny Devine.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I remember a lot about this era.
And they all look like... I don't know. They all look like they're a part of, like, Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
Like, they're
yeah.
all doing their best Snake cosplay.
Yeah.
Except for, like, Raven, but...
Raven's in his all white.
Because Raven's got the whole thing where he, like, whips him with a cane or something like that.
Yeah, he wears the white suit. He's got the white hair. I think he had a white top hat.
He was probably trying to be fucking Malcolm McDowell from Clockwork Orange.
Fair enough, yeah. Yeah. I thought you were going to go with Mordecai there for a second.
Oh, man. Mordecai, the real estate agent. Buddy.
Mordecai/Raven aside, Douglas is backstage with Team Canada. They don't know where Bobby Roode is. Jarrett then enters, and Bobby Roode is right next to him. Comes in, teenage screwing us, boys. Just like with Monty, but these two, you know, these guys, they actually listen to the bullshit.
Is Jeff Jarrett like Donald Trump and Team Canada's like QAnon?
Nothing anon about him, but I mean, yeah, I suppose. Jeff Jarrett is akin. He's like, I'm going to rile the troops to do my dirty work. I suppose, yeah. I suppose. It's a spot on assessment there. We should call Travis the assessor.
Bruce Mitchell, you and your fake news.
Fuck you, Bruce. Team Canada, which is A1, the Deviant, Bobby Roode, Eric Young, and Petey Williams, taking on the four live crew. And thank God that this match has what it has, because I'm sick of saying those three words together, four live crew, which is BG James, Kip James, Conan, and Rod Killings.
Now, they fucking sent the four live crew out there with either... no idea for a new theme song to give them with new lyrics put in or a dead mic for Ron. Because that rap is some of the worst shit I've ever heard in my life.
First words. Horrible rapping by Ron Killings.
Like, it is truly, truly awful.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I'm not a huge fan of it. And you know, you would get this bad rapping by Ron Killings, and then Conan and the rest of the crew just go through the greatest hits. They don't even give Kip James a mic, which thank God. But yeah, you know, this match was what it was. You know what I mean? There was nothing in it that was like, fuck, that's horrible. You know, like, these guys can't work at all. These guys are pretty fucking old.
It's a stupid fucking feud. Four Live Crew is a stupid gimmick.
Yep.
And nothing comes out of this. The James Gang is just more old dudes in TNA.
They're just going to try to bait Vince into saying something about TNA. That's all that James Gang
is. That's the Voodoo Kin Mafia.
Oh, same shit.
And they tried, but they were older and worse. And that's just how it kept on going. And Ron Killings doesn't do a damn thing in TNA.
No, he would leave pretty soon.
I mean, he would get the Pac-Man Jones thing.
Yeah.
And he would also, you know, launch his music career.
Yeah.
Would debut in TNA.
This guy is true.
He would be the only person to use the same theme song in TNA and WWE.
I'd imagine, which is mind-boggling, but hey, Ron the Truth Killings has stayed with the WWE for so long now that it's crazy and done nothing.
Probably there for life at this point.
Why would you ever leave, really? You know what I mean? Like, you're getting paid probably good money for being there for so long. For sure, you're never going to leave unless they make you leave.
Like Briscoe getting fired?
Yeah, like, it's just crazy. But I mean, hey, it's old man that Vince probably doesn't even talk to anymore. It's like, have you seen Briscoe, Gerald Briscoe's hairdo these days? Like Vince
and the
is probably,
sideburns.
Yeah, Vince is probably embarrassed to be around him. He looks like the father from fucking Devil's Rejects, or not Devil's Rejects, House of a Thousand Corpses. You know, the comedian guy, right? That guy.
Yeah, looks like Otis from Twin Peaks.
Yeah. Conan would take off a sneaker again as well. He would hit it dead center in the chest to Petey Williams. Petey Williams sells it. Conan then hits a rolling clothesline. Kip hits a Famaster. EY comes in with a chair, but Conan would take the chair, and he would hit Kip over the head with it. Bobby Roode would then coyishly go for the pin, afraid that Conan's going to hit him, and Conan assures that it's all right, and he backs out, and they've won. He then hits BG and then tries to hug Killings.
He domes BG.
Yeah, yeah. Ron Killings looks shocked. He's just like, what's up? What's up?
Yeah, people over there, what's up? Feel me stand up and say, what's up? But yeah, he's got some mad crazy eyes going on, doesn't
he?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
He has got the stink eye down.
He's another one that emotes real well.
Yes.
Facially.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Simon Diamond or backstage was, oh, I almost said Dean Douglas. I mean, I suppose he is Dean Douglas, but he brings up how much they have been bitching and complaining backstage. You would get a lot more baseball puns. Simon Diamond is even wearing a chest protector. And they basically bring up, you know, it's like AJ Brzezinski and Dale Torborg are going to be in this match because they have association with the White Sox. But it's a really good promo by Diamond,
yeah,
I will say.
I said the same thing. He cuts a good promo. He's got a lot of confidence on the mic.
Yeah.
And that fucking really helps.
It does.
He might look like an average Joe. I don't give a shit.
But he sounds like he believes what he's saying.
He's a good manager.
Yeah.
Good manager. It's just a shame that none of this has momentum.
Yeah. No. He would run down AJ's stats and mentioning how he had to bring a dude that failed in wrestling ringside to help him out. Yeah, like I said, good promo. Good fucking promo. But Travis.
Pop quiz.
Oh. Do you remember what the second part was? No. Travis, King Kong was remade in 2005. It's actually a second remake of the 1933 film, which was directed by Marion C. Cooper and Ernest B. Schoenstatt. I probably butchered that last name. But what big-name director took the helm and directed the remake starring Naomi Watts, Jack Black, and Adrian Brody? Was it Ron Howard?
It's Peter Jackson.
Not bad, Travis, not bad. Never even gave me a chance to finish it. I had Ron Howard. Like, I had good contenders.
Steven Spielberg,
James Cameron, and Peter Jackson. So, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if you're not 100% sure on who did it, it's like, it could be very hard.
You know what I didn't know, though? I did not know that Naomi Watts was in that movie.
No?
Did not.
Now you do. No, she's definitely no Mulholland Drive Naomi Watts, but she's Naomi Watts at least. Yeah. So.
No Mulholland Drive Naomi Watts, no Australian Naomi Watts, no Janie Jones Naomi Watts.
No, I wouldn't call either one of them that. But either way.
Okay,
cool. Back to the show.
Yeah. Okay.
Travis, Base Brawl.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Base Brawl?
Well, it's always nice to see Bobby Heenan.
It is.
Chris Sabin, Sanjay Dutt, just always a pleasure to see those two young lads as well. Dale Torborg, though, can fuck right off. And so can AJ. I got no chin, Brzezinski.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
He looks like fucking, he looks like Jeremy Borash's older brother.
I'm sure that, like, yesterday you said this was, like, one of your favorite matches on the show.
It is a good match.
And you're just like, they can fuck right off.
No, the baseball shit sucks. It fucking sucks. But it's a fine match. Like, the baby faces go over, and the heels, you know, the heels should not have a comeuppance on the fucking on this match anyway. This should be a feel-good match.
What makes it a base brawl?
Because there's a baseball player in it.
It's so stupid, though.
It's just a fancy name, man.
It's just like why do you gotta fancy up a six-man tag?
Come on, TNA have a they have like a scramble match going on the No Surrender Impact that's coming up. And what do they call it? Championship six-way revolver or something like that? Like
revolving door championship six-way match.
Like, it's just got to be fucking mouthy and wordy, and everything's got to be original and edgy and creative. Like, I don't know.
And that's where everybody needs a nickname started, too. Fuck you, TNA, for starting that.
Now, if you wanted some sort of stipulation in base brawl, what would you do? It kind of like a bull rope match where they got
to touch all corners.
Touch all corners, yeah. And there's like a base there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could dig that.
You know what I mean? Like, to me, when I was going into it, it was like there has to be something along those lines.
Yep. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Travis, this is Torborg's first match since 2001, where he wrestled for the XWF, some indie promotion somewhere. His last.
You don't know what the XWF is?
I don't know.
That's Jimmy Hart's promotion with Hogan. Yeah. Like, that's.
Oh.
You don't know anything about the XWF?
I've heard about the promotion they did. I didn't know it was called XWF, though. I've never seen any of it. His last match in WCW was against Elix Skipper, who is also in this match here tonight. A little bit of knowledge. Elix Skipper and Dale Torborg go way back. The only thing I can say is Dale Torborg, he has good punches. I thought that. And then at the same time, it's like you see this. Okay, so he's the baseball player coming in, right? He's I think he works like backstage or something like that. I don't think he does anything.
He's a water boy?
Yeah. Like somebody called him the designated hitter, and it's like he's not the designated hitter. There's no way Dale Torborg in 2005 is the designated hitter. No.
Designated driver, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But at least the portrayal of him coming in, at least it didn't stink up the joint. You know what I mean? This wasn't a actor coming in or a sports player coming in and just stinking out the show.
It's better than Pac-Man Jones.
Yeah, Pac-Man Jones. Well, he couldn't get hit.
He couldn't get hit. No. All he could do was leapfrog.
Yeah.
And it's better than having Hermie Sadler, NASCAR driver, show up all the time for no reason.
Yeah.
And just because he's Jarrett's boy.
And Toby McGuire. Toby Keith.
Toby Keith showed up on one show back in 2002.
Was it just one show?
Yeah, when he was relevant. Like, Toby Keith, I think, is fine. He suplexed Scott Hall.
That's true. Yeah, because there was always those rumors that Toby Keith was going to buy TNA, too, wasn't
it? Like, I mean, whether or not you like him or not, he actually did do a decent celebrity angle in TNA.
Yeah. Before anyone enters, though, TNA and West are introducing their guests for the evening. Johnny Damon, some other guy I can't remember. But then West wants to introduce another baseball player, and Mark Tremonti from Creed and Alter Bridge. But the cameraman doesn't go down to look at him. And he's just almost damn near begging. I was like, cameraman, go down and show Mark Tremonti. Go down, show these guys. And the camera just cuts back over to the match. And it's like,
doesn't Wes say something like he's part of Creed, a band that sold like 10 million records or something?
I mean, I can believe that Creed done it. They had two albums that probably sold close to that. I'd assume so anyways. I don't know. I really don't know.
Fresh off of doing that Edge theme, though, goes to TNA. What a guy.
Yeah, that was the Alter Bridge, right? Yeah. Bobby Heenan, I wish he could have done this a little bit healthier. You know what I mean? But
Bobby sold TNA like no other, too. He's like,
he made sure.
Go fucking tell your friends. Get up off your couch. Go to your friend's house. Tell them to buy this pay-per-view. Tell them the TNA is the hottest thing going. Like, man, he was really selling this shit.
Oh, yeah. And he's calling, you know, Sanjay Dutt and Chris Sabin the two best athletes he's ever seen in his life. He was really, really into it. And even if he wasn't into it, he was portraying that he was into it. And that's really all that matters.
Yeah.
But Sanjay Dutt and Elix Skipper, I thought, really worked well together, aside from one spot where, like, Dutt does, like, this great tilt whirl, but
I think
Dutt would get dropped on his face.
It always kind of falls short. I think that they can't handle that many revolutions.
I think it's got to be very hard to keep track of where Dutt is going at that point
and
in time.
Where you finish off?
Yeah. I think he would slow that down too, though. After a while, wouldn't he? Like when he loses his hair, he doesn't really do all those.
I don't think I've ever watched a Sanjay Dutt match when he lost his hair.
Oh no, fair enough.
Maybe in Ring-a-King.
Something I haven't thought of for a long time. Simon Diamond though, he hits Dale with one of those knee pads. AJ then tries to help his teammate. The ref doesn't see it, so AJ just pulls the ref out, and he interrupts the count. Bobby then has words with the ref for some reason. He just leaves ringside or leaves the announce table. AJ then enters the ring, hits Diamond with what I thought was a cookie sheet, but it's actually a home plate. And Saban hits the cradle shock, and Dutt follows up with a Hindu press for the win.
It's good stuff. A lot of fun.
Yeah. They then present the two baseball players with TNA Championship rings.
My favorite part here was when Bobby took one and eyed it up.
Yeah, he also bit it to see if it was real and stuff. It's like, good on you, Bobby. At least you haven't lost a fucking step. Christian's backstage with Douglas. He says that Monty can have his Christian doll. He even asked him how he can be as cool as Captain Charisma. The answer is he can't. He then says that he'll enter the Serengeti and come out with a lifeless body of an alpha male because that's how he rolls.
I thought it was a good promo. Good promo.
This brings us to the NWA World Heavyweight Title number one contendership match between Christian Cage and Monty Brown. And if you ask me, this is where the Monty Brown basically ends. Like this is the nail in the coffin on Mr. Monty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he would be gone by September. He would leave September 4th, 2006. Right, so
the nail in the coffin is 10 months before he leaves?
No, I mean, like, this is what killed his run. Like, this is not what made him leave. This is what killed his run. Like, he was never... You know what I mean? Like, what did he do beyond this?
He main events the next pay-per-view against Sting
match.
And Christian.
Yeah,
in a tag match. I don't think he does much. I think he's in a Monster's Ball, you know?
Yeah, I think he is in a four-ways Monster's Ball. But, he's it's a far cry from being a contender.
He's in the King of the Mountain next year. He just kind of sticks around until September when he gets that sweet offer from WWE.
He would join WWE January 4th, actually. Like that, at least that's... I don't know if that's the day he signed or if that's the day he debuted.
Probably when he debuted, I would say.
So I don't know. He might have signed right after leaving.
But with that being said, he's always around. Like it's not like they just drop him.
No, but he always takes back seat to the new person in the...
Oh, yeah.
But aside from Christian hitting a finger-licking good crossbody to the outside, Monty is basically in control the first half of the match and just taking liberties with him. Just not literally, but, you know, just throwing him around, gorilla press slams him to the outside.
I got a good laugh out of Cage doing the Monty Brown cheek wipe on the rope, and then TNA roaring in laughter.
TNA. He's so energetic. Everything excites him. Even Replay is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he loves replays.
He loves them. His reaction to some replays are fantastic. I'd say Cage, it's not really his match per se.
He's got a, you know, he's the one that's probably doing all the work.
But no, I mean, like, they're trying to keep Monty strong here, at least.
Keep Monty strong. Like, it's a very back and forth, equal, like, bouted match. But at the same time, it's... I don't know. It's not amazing.
There's nothing amazing.
It's not amazing. No. Christian looks really good in this match. Monty, you know, holds his own, and it's just an average match.
Yeah,
it's an average match.
Yeah, very very average. How long would it take for Christian to turn heel? It's no time soon, right? Like it's months and months away.
I don't think he turns heel until the Jarrett and Sting feud ends.
When's that?
Bound for Glory.
Oh, sometime next year, you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
And I only bring it up just because, like, Cage shows some heel nuances, and I was like, are they trying to build towards it? But I didn't think that it was anytime soon, so I doubt this is any building towards, like...
I think by 2007, he's definitely heel.
Yeah.
Like, by the time that year hits, he's definitely full-blown heel with the Coalition and stuff like that.
So, like, I don't know, I just didn't like him using the ropes for leverage, you know, biting Monty. You're supposed to be babyface, but, hey, it is what it is. Babyface shouldn't cheat, if you ask me. Especially when it's a 7-minute match or a 12-minute match. You know what I mean? It's just like, Okay, well, you know, if you end up beating him in 12 minutes, you didn't really need to cheat to win because there's no real reason to cheat.
Yeah, when has Christian ever been a babyface until now?
Well,
He's worked most of his career as a heel, so maybe he's just got to shake off the cobwebs, you know?
Oh, no, for sure. But
there's a couple things where he's like, oh, shit, probably shouldn't have done that. That was a stupid idea.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just really the only two things I can really say about this match, you know, that is a downfall of sorts. The rest of the match is fine. That's really it. He gets a good Eddie spot there. They start chanting Eddie when he does frog splash.
And I feel like he starts to do the frog splash consistently after this, too.
I think so.
I think that's a move added to his repertoire.
Yeah. Monty would mount some kind of comeback or somewhat of a comeback, hitting a, if it's not called this, it should be, but a mighty Monty bomb.
It's called an alpha bomb.
Okay, I still like Mighty Monty Bond, but whatever. The turnbuckle, though, becomes exposed.
Why does everything have to have a nickname, Tyler?
Well, every move has a name.
I know. I'm just throwing shade at you with your TNA thing. Why does everyone have to have a nickname, huh?
But they do, though. Everybody in TNA has a nickname. The Monster Abyss, the Charismatic Enigma, Jeff Hardy, the Icon Sting. Smojo has one, too. I'm sure of it.
Simone Submission Machine.
Simone Submission Machine.
What about Christian?
Christian has a... I can't think of one. Rhino has a stupid one.
The War Machine?
The War Machine, Rhino. It's when everybody has it... Yes, it's stupid, if you ask me. I just don't like how everybody... Wildcat Chris Harris. From Cowboy James Storm.
Fallen Angel. Phenomenal.
Yeah, everybody has one.
Chris Sabin, Alex Shelley.
Chris Sabin is... Chris Sabin, I'm sure, had one.
Matt Bentley doesn't have one. Naturals don't have
one. Well, I mean, who would give the Naturals a nickname?
Anyway, I mean, even the authority figures do. The living legend, Larry Zbysko.
Yeah.
The franchise, yeah. Shane Douglas. Raven does not have a nickname.
Well, no, because he doesn't have a name. He just has like one word. Right? Like, I suppose War Machine Rhino. Sabu is a lot. And
Suso
didn't even come up with them. So,
Father James Mitchell.
Father James. Everybody has. See? Fucking told us so. But Low-Key. Low-Key would just have many names.
Senshi.
The Warrior.
He would be the... No, he would have the modern day Warrior, Senshi. He would have a nickname,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, he would. Fucking hey. Alpha Male Monty Brown. I don't know if we went through that one. Yeah.
I think, okay, which one's the worst, though? I think it's Jeff Hardy's.
Charismatic Enigma? I've never liked that.
I hate that.
I've never liked that at all. I've never liked the phrase Charismatic Enigma, to be completely honest with you. No, Christian gets the win with the Unprettier. It's not called a kill. Would he call it a kill switch at all in TNA?
It would be the kill switch when he returns to the WWE.
Gotta
For some reason,
TNA
they had to change that name.
Yeah, yeah. But they would go back to the Diddley Boys, the Deadly Diddleys, backstage with Shane Douglas, who ponders where the Dudleys have been. Brother Ray, he has this.
I gotta ask you, where have you been for these last couple weeks? Nobody's seen you.
Shane, the reason why ain't nobody seen us, let's put it this way, AMW did not run us out of town. We've been representing TNA all over the world, especially in Japan. Me and my brother Devon, the All Japan Real World Tag Team Champions, but we got something else on our mind. Something more important on our mind.
Tag League Champions.
The NWA Tag Team Titles. The one set of titles that Team 3D has never had. The one set of titles that are more prestigious in the history of our business than anything else. But tonight is about revenge. Tonight is about AMW and tables. You don't know a damn thing about tables, boys. And I swear to my mother, my brother, God, and every single TNA fan out there, we're going to kick your stinking asses, and you're tasting some mother effing Dudley 3D wood.
Now you fucked up. You have fucked up now.
You can just tell by the look on his face after, too. He's like, fuck, I shouldn't have said Dudley. I'm not allowed to say Dudley. Should have said Diddley.
That's Eric Rowan.
That's Redbeard. Eric Rowan. Redbeard. Eric Rowan. Fucking Jericho. If you want to take a look at who was in the World Tag League this year, Aki Bono and Kenji Muto. would go to the finals with Bubba Ray and Devon. There would also be Jamal and Tao Kei. I don't know how to pronounce his actual name. Kaz Hayashi would team up with Satoshi Kojima. You would have Shawama and Rajin. I don't know who that guy is. Nakajima would be with Sasaki, Kensuke Sasaki. Akira would be with Arashi. D'Lo Brown and Bull Buchanan. Giant Bernard and Taru. And Tsuji Kondo and Brother Yashi. I don't know who those guys are at all. But either way, there's some notable names. They're like D'Lo Brown, Buchanan, Jamal, Kaz Hayashi, Aki Bono, Muda, obviously. And the Dudley Boys. Nakajima. So, yeah. Whole lots of things going on there.
Whole lot.
But this would lead us to Team 3D taking on America's Most Wanted. And this is obviously a match going on from the feud that was brought on by drinking booze at their mock funeral.
You drank booze? You pissed on our
caskets?
You drank raw booze?
Who was that said raw
Vince
booze?
Vince, man. Vince.
That's raw. Oh, Jake Roberts, right? Yeah.
That's raw booze.
fuck. But the Dudleys, they waste no time
deadly.
In this match. Deadly, buddy. That was pretty diddly of you. They don't waste any time getting this match started. They attack AMW as they're making their entrance. This match... I mean, it was a tables match, you know what I mean? Like,
it was a lot of, I'm going to brawl over here, you brawl over there, we'll bounce around.
I'm going to set up this table, you'll move it out of the way before your partner goes through it, you know.
Bubba Ray Dudley? Diddley? Bubba Diddley?
Bubba Diddley.
Bob Diddley is the pastiest dude I've ever seen on a wrestling show in my life.
Pasty. Especially when he's chubby.
He is his own lighting source. Like, you don't need a lighting rig in TNA if Bubba Diddley is fucking wrestling, man. You don't.
Instead of having, like, the reflective backing on a light, you just stand Bubba behind the light and it'll just reflect off of him and onto the fucking... That's how he got the Velvet Sky, little known fact. He was playing the role of reflective of the light for her photo shoot, and she couldn't really see him, and then she started dating him. She sucked his dick while the light was on and didn't know he was
there. So it was just always good lighting for her photos.
Yeah.
Just
perfect
vanity piece.
Still to this day. If there's a picture taken in the Bubba Velvet's household, Bubba's behind it being...
His pasty light sheens off of his calves.
You know, I will say, Bubba Ray has some decent calves.
I like how that was his gimmick when he was the world champ.
He had good calves.
I got big calves.
I mean, that just, you know what though, that comes from all those years being a big guy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's
and
all
taking
that
some fucking roids.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure he was on the roids for a bit. But, you know, there would be some decent work between both teams. You know, it's fine. I did like how Bubba would save Devon from going through a table. He would get Irish whipped into the corner, get ready to go through the table, but Bubba would tackle him to the ground and just hug his brother real tight and just be like, I got you, brother. I got you. Even though we got different fathers, I got your back. But AMW attempts a 3D after he super kicked the Devon. It doesn't work, obviously. The Diddleys, on the other hand, hit a really dope-looking death sentence through a table.
Gets the hard sell, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Put Storm through the table, so technically he's out of the match. And they will quickly send Harris up the ramp and hit some nasty chair shots and hit a 3D through the table and get the win.
It's fine.
I'm glad it wasn't a tag team title match.
Too
though.
Much hardcore fucking matches,
yeah,
man.
All
like
the time.
You
all
got
the
Raven Canyon match had hardcore elements to it. The barbed wire match.
This match and the main event. The main event. We'll talk about it. I do have some major issues with the main event, but I will say it's better than most.
I have issues with the main event too, but it was fun. Like, I didn't spend the last 20 minutes of this show really, really wanting to turn it off. You know what? If I got to deal with this, then I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get that. But what wasn't hard to watch by any means was the next match, Samoa Joe taking on AJ Styles for the X Division title. This undefeated Joe, you know what I mean? That's the story here. Joe's run through everybody in the X Division. TNA basically has no choice but to give him a title shot. You add in the attack that he did on Daniels, and obviously it sets off something in Styles to set this match off and ready to go.
Disobeyed the code.
Disobeyed the code. And so like, there's a lot of history between Daniels and AJ, and there's a lot of stories you can tell within a match of that style, you know, and great, great match. This was fantastic. Like, you got the undefeated Joe. He comes out, and he's still sporting that bloody towel.
He's got cheetah spots now, too.
Yeah, who fucking highlighted his hair? Stevie Wonder?
Dots. Like, what?
It was bad. Like, it's big. Like, and it's like no rhyme or reason. It's just like you got a bunch here that's blonde or gold.
Dusty fan, man.
Dusty fan. Dusty had cheetah spots?
No, it's like his polka dot singlet.
Oh. Because, like, what it is, too, is, like, he's gotten highlights, blonde highlights, but his hair is too dark for it to take blonde, so it went orange.
It did. It yeah. did. It looked like acid wash.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know I've had that happen to me when I was a kid. I go to highlight your hair at home using this blonde, and it's like, oh, I need to bleach it because my hair's too dark. Fair enough. But thankfully, those days are over because that fucking shit's weird. Kip Saban, I'm looking at you.
he looked old.
Because you thought he was from the 90s. Really? But this web match, it wastes no time. It's stiff as hell. Joe plays a dominant force throughout the whole match. It's really only when Joe gets cocky is when AJ starts to mount any sort of comeback. But it never lasts long. Joe always has an answer to put AJ back down and keep him at bay. Like, AJ really, he gets offense, but he never gets a true string of offense. He would get, like, a lucky shot, he would go for the pin, only get a two. Something like that. You know what I mean?
It was a real big underdog story, for sure.
It is. It is. And then, like, Joe, there's that one point in time where Joe just about damn near fucking kicks the Christianity out of AJ Styles in a series of kicks. Like, it is fucking wild.
Kicked the fucking Jesus out of him.
Oh, yeah. You can see the light exiting his mouth along with it. It's like, fuck, that holy Bible that you got is no longer holy no more, my friend. It was fucking crazy. Joe would dismantle AJ outside, slamming into the guardrail and like that halfway powerbomb deal that he does.
Yeah,
that,
I guess the fucking, like, the slingshot.
Yeah. Not pendulum, because the pendulum is when you got him. Yeah. But I guess this is kind of like his replacement for the Olay spot that he would do in ROH, where he would set him up in a chair and then kick their face into the guardrail.
Well, he did it to Daniels.
Oh, I suppose he did do it to Daniels.
That's how he laid him out. Yeah,
that's true. That's true. It's always a great spot, though. I've always enjoyed that. It was one of the highlights that I really remember is all the time Joe did that to people.
It would always be a good spot, too, with the ROH guardrails because they had the fucking thing on it. Yeah.
Yeah. AJ, his biggest string of offense would be when he would manage the back body drop running Joe outside and hitting a picture perfect Fosbury flop. Beautiful move. A move that Tanay mentioned that AJ hadn't done on a TNA broadcast in a year or more.
I am almost positive he did it at Unbreakable. Almost positive.
I don't think it was a Fosbury flop. I really don't.
Well, I do. We can just leave it at that.
Mitch, get the fact checker going. Anyways, I don't know what would bloody up AJ, but he would definitely get quite bloodied.
I'm sure Joe just fucking potatoed him at one point.
Potatoed him in the mouth.
I would assume so.
Yeah.
And Joe's mouth gets bloody too, doesn't it?
I think so. But once AJ gets bloody, he starts to hulk up a little bit. And it's like, I can feel the power of Christ running through my bones.
That's the passion of the Christ.
Passion. No, Mel Gibson owns rights so that you won't get sued.
Well, he can be like, it's my return to Christ. You may also know it as the Passion of the Christ. Yeah, it used to be a Mel Gibson movie right there. It's AJ Styles' favorite movie. You know, like you, TNA thing. You got to name drop, but you can't call them that.
Yeah. I can see that being AJ's favorite move.
Should have been his finisher.
Passion of the Christ. Jesus Christ. Oh. The Christ clash. Styles Christ. Who knows?
Fuck, Matt. Do you think that he joined the Christian Coalition because he thought it was another thing?
Oh, definitely thought it was like church association. He was going to bring his kids there and they're going to play games or read Bible stories.
Kaufman and Christian, how nice it is that he's got this group going. Really nice. You got a youth group. Teach everyone about Jesus.
Doesn't really smell like a church, but I'll forgive it. Yeah. This church always has that distinct church smell.
Fair.
Every church I've ever been into smells like a church, and I don't know what does that, but I don't know. Church just smelled odd. I don't know if it's just the copious amount of Bibles and that paper just permeates through the whole fucking church.
Probably.
There's also this crazy lariat and powerbomb that Joe would hit. Like, he's on his knees and he hits AJ with a lariat and it looks like it murders AJ.
It does.
Great match. You got anything to say about this match?
No, I thought that it was easily the best match on the show.
Yeah, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
I like just the way it was laid out. Joe is pure domination.
Yeah.
Like, no one can stay on his level in the X Division. And AJ is...
Especially now.
AJ is right behind them because AJ can lift him up for powerbomb styles, clashes, everything like that. I mean, Joe's a little tall. That Styles Clash.
Yeah.
That neck draping. Iffy. Holy fuck, dude. That scared me.
Yeah, it was a little low. Definitely a little low. After that Styles Clash, AJ would go up top out of desperation. Joe then cuts him off. AJ would almost like orbit Joe. He'd jump over him and just use his gravitational pull to just go around him.
That was awesome.
It was great. And he would turn that into a quasi roll-up pin. But he's cut off by Joe, who slips in the Kikina clutch and puts AJ to sleep.
Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome.
AJ would try to go for the ropes, but he would fall. He would just go out before he would get to those ropes. And yeah, I know Joe got the X Division title, and he's going to dominate this X Division for a few
quite
months
a while.
Now. Yeah,
quite a while.
Yeah. You also kind of get baited in that Joe is going to show some respect to AJ.
He pulls AJ to his feet.
Yeah. Then boom, hits him with the title.
Yeah.
So, gets another onslaught like he gave Daniels.
He sets up that muscle buster on the chair again.
Yeah. And you would hear that beautiful people rip off.
Disposable teens.
Is it disposable teens? Ah, yeah, I can hear it now that you say that. Disposable teens. Anyways, we should
Oh, no.
No, this is the wrong week to be singing Marilyn Manson.
The amount of times we talked about Chris Benoit on this podcast.
I know, but it wasn't the day it came out. Joe would then grab a chair, though, and he would, fend off. Or not fend off, but every ref and security guard would enter the ring, and he would back down, go about his day. So, yeah. We would also then get a good video package hyping up the main event. It's basically building the feud. And, I really liked where they went with the whole Jarrett and Rhino thing. I thought there's good mic work either way. Just take a listen to a little bit of the mic work between Jarrett and Rhino.
8 months ago, it was supposed to be the biggest day of the year for wrestling. It was the worst day of my life.
You know what I feel like I'm on now?
What?
Dr. Phil!
What I did, I can't explain. I was going through a divorce.
Whose fault is it that Rhino wrecked a 5-star hotel lobby and completely trashed it? His fault!
My ex-wife walked out on me. She took my child. She took part of my heart.
Whose fault is it that his old lady divorced him?
I love my family, and I miss my family.
It's Rhino's fault.
I know my wants. I have the heart of a champion.
That is the biggest, sappiest, sympathetic piece I've ever seen in my life.
I gave to the fans what they wanted. Someone to kick the living shit. Jeff Jarrett, take that title.
Rhino, I'm going to send you back to the trailer park with a pack of cigarettes in one hand and a fork in the other.
I'm the challenger today.
That ended abruptly. I didn't expect that to end right there.
It ended really quickly.
Yeah. they cut to Rhino, who's shown with Douglas, and he says that he's got his life on track now. His daughter's in Germany, and she still thinks he's a hero. And he's going to slice Jarrett in half with a gore.
Gore.
It was a 3.5 Meltzer rated match. It's good. definitely a good match. We would get an ultra rare glimpse of Rhino hitting a slingshot crossbody. I feel like a Nat Geo narrator saying that, because, you know, Rhino. And at least he spells Rhino correctly here and not with a Y.
I'm sure that was a WWE thing, though.
Well, yeah, because he would. I don't think it was spelled with a Y in ECW.
No,
I think so. That was just one of those things where it's like, you need a Y. It's the only way you'll get over. That and wrestling to cheery. That'll get you over. But no. They would brawl through the crowd. They would do, you know, some stiff shots into the wall. I will say Jarrett does take some stiff shots into the wall, so, you know, kind of makes you feel good about it.
That balcony wall? Yeah.
Yeah. I think myself that you probably like this match more than I do. Like,
I just thought it was easy to watch, you know? Like, there was a lot of brawling in the crowd. Yeah, sure, it happened way too many times. They went to that well a lot. The interference is my issue with this match.
The
ref bumps, the interference, it was just unnecessary. It happens in every single TNA main event.
Yeah.
Even the one that Jarrett lost, it happens.
Yeah,
still.
Because he can't go over clean. You know, nobody can go over clean.
Yeah, it's just fucking annoying. It's really, really annoying.
The ref just looked like the biggest idiot, where, like, the ref would spring up, do a pin, and he would go right back into the fetal position. And it's like, dude, give it a fucking break.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Dude, refs are weak, man. That might expel a week's worth of energy just by doing that three count.
It's so stupid. I just hate it so much. It's like, if you're going to do anything, it's like, at least just turn your head or something and, like, go against the ropes, not go right back into the fetal position.
Ref bump psychology is some of the worst psychology in wrestling.
Thank God I don't know if there's been any ref bump in TNA yet.
AEW,
yeah.
I don't know.
I don't think there has. If it has, it hasn't been memorable. That's for goddamn well sure. But no, Rhino would set up a table. He would steal Devon's gimmick and say, "Who's the man?" And
who's your daddy?
Who has the devil's candy? Who's your daddy? Imagine is when his Team Canada comes down. You know, get that horrible ref bump. You get Jackie Gata. She would come down. Just never ending. You would have the only thing good that would come from Jackie Gata is the sound of the slap she gave Jarrett. That's about it. Great slap. Other than that, that's it. Rhino gores Jarrett, but Jarrett kicks out. He would pick up a couple chairs, go for the Rhino driver, but Demore cuts him off at the ankles with a hockey stick. Looked like it hurt a lot. Like,
made a good sound, too.
Yeah.
That's not a kendo stick. That's a hockey stick.
Like, it might be pre-cut.
It could be, but like, still.
Oh, it would break the ankle if it wasn't pre-cut.
Of course
sure.
It would.
This allows Jarrett to hit a stroke onto the chairs. He would pick up a victory.
That looked good.
That
stroke was a very effective looking move.
And it was very easy for Jarrett to take.
And you know what? The best bump of this match, though, was off the scaffold.
Oh.
Rhino being like hit with the chair, and then he just fucking annihilates that fucking table.
Oh, yeah. No, he. It's almost as if he lands on his feet, too. And you know, like falling from that height, it's got to hurt.
But the
a
table
lot.
Just breaks.
Yeah.
Like, it's a perfect break.
Well, yeah. And I wouldn't think Rhino would have to hit a table very hard or very square for it to break, because he's a stout man. Like, he's a lot of weight.
No, well, he tries to gore Jarrett through the table.
Doesn't even break.
No, man, it just falls on them.
Yeah. Jarrett looked like he took a horrible tumble there, though. Like, he went ass over tea kettle through the entrance. In which, it's a move that he tried to do last month.
And Monster's Ball. Thwarted.
Yeah, got taken out by AMW, I believe.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that was at Genesis.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't at Bound for Glory. Yeah,
no.
Okay, yeah.
So at least they teased that then, and we got it here. So at least we had that. At least we had that. But nonetheless, still a decent match. Wasn't the worst match on the card for sure. Wasn't the worst main event we've seen so far. So can't complain, really. can't complain. Now this show is basically the X Division match. That's what really sets this show apart.
It's a barbed wire match and an X Division match.
Yeah. And that X Division match, get ready, because there's more of this combination throughout the next few months. You get a barrage of Christopher Daniels, Samoa Joe, and AJ Styles, and I will not complain about it because it's beautiful.
These shows showcase perfectly what TNA does right and what they do wrong.
Yeah.
So well.
Very easy. Very easy to see. Very, very easy to see. Post-match, the lights go out, and we see Sting's signature Scorpion and his music coming through the speakers.
Love TNA, Sting's TNA music.
I do too. It's so frantic. Yeah. You also see his coat, boots, and jacket appearing in the middle of the ring as we go off air. And it's like, did Jarrett and who was the other guy in the ring?
Scott.
Damore? Yeah.
You think Jarrett, they set it up?
Well, they probably did set it up. But like, did they even look at it once while the cameras, because like they were just looking into the crowd?
I don't think that they did.
It's like, guys, there's a spotlight above your head shining in the middle of the ring. Maybe look into the middle of the ring.
It could be him.
It could be him. It's not, but it could be. But no, that's a TNA turning point. Definitely not the worst TNA pay-per-view we've done. We haven't done a huge amount, but it's not the worst. We've done four so far.
We have not done a terrible TNA pay-per-view yet.
No. I would probably say maybe the worst one is Genesis.
And last month you were like, I'm glad we did this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I think the
maybe
worst
Bound for Glory.
I think the worst one we've done is Unbreakable.
Maybe the three-way.
It's a one-match show.
A little bit. Yeah.
One-match show. Yeah. Like Rhino and Raven.
Yeah, it sucked. Ugh. The pizza cutter and shit. Ugh. Yeah. But what's coming up is TNA Against All Odds 2006. It's going to be the Naturals taking on Austin Aries and Roderick Strong. They're a tag team now.
Tyler, your wishes came true.
I know, right? It's like, so 2 months into their run, maybe three, they finally realized they maybe should
just
team
months?
Up.
They've been there since like August.
Fair enough. Four-way match, Jay Lethal taking on Alex Shelley, Mac Bentley, and Petey Williams.
Jay Lethal
makes his debut.
Really young.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Crazy hair, Jay Lethal, too. The James Gang takes on Latin American Exchange, Homicide, and Machete.
Machete, yeah.
And then they're with Conan as well. So this is Conan's rebuttal to the James Gang.
So in between this is where Apollo becomes a one-night member of the LAX.
One night, hey? Might have to look for that. NWA World Titles match. I don't know why, but it's not the Dudleys. It's America's Most Wanted taking on Chris Sabin and Sanjay Dutt.
What the fuck?
Yep.
For the tag titles.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. A Falls Count Anywhere match. Rhino taking on Abyss.
Well, Tyler, let's just preface too by saying that we are skipping a month in between shows. So there could
resolution.
Be some loopholes that are going to be fixed.
That's true. Samoa Joe taking on AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels for the X Division title. Team 3D taking on Team Canada, which is Bobby Roode and Eric Young. And then we have a NWA World Heavyweight title match, Christian Cage taking on Jeff Jarrett with special referee Earl Hebner.
Huh.
Fresh off of getting caught selling those t-shirts.
That's everyone's favorite referee to have in a TNA match, Jeff Jarrett match.
Oh, yeah.
Your special referee. Yeah.
Yeah. A special referee is a regular referee. Just from another company.
Yeah, well, he might screw you.
He could. But before we get out of here, we might as well do some house cleaning, which, everybody loves. Patreon shout-outs that we're going to do for the first time at the end of the show, because it just takes too goddamn long to get into the show. But thank you for everybody that basically gives us money every month, just like from the musically inclined side of the family, Wooly Fudge. He wants to be called Father, but not for a dollar. Trox Fudge, the Intergalactic Brother, Fat Superman Fudge, our doe-eyed cousins from down under, Corey and Trevor Fudge, our brother with the biggest cock,
Roaches,
Savage Fudge, his future's so bright he's only 7% of the metal, Sterling Silver Fudge, that uncle who calls it right down the middle, Mike the Ref Fudge, and then that cousin you've never met but dad swears you have, Moose Knuckle Fudge. You can follow us on Twitter at TheFutterish. You can follow Travis on Twitter
at FudgingUp.
Facebook and Instagram is the Futterish Podcast. T-shirts at whatamaneuver.net. And you can listen to me every weekend on Suplex City Limits. But without further ado, keep on rocking Free World and
do do loot do
do do.